Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday. It is January 10th, 2023. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Hi.
Happy National Oysters Rockefeller Day. How about that?
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
I know. It's actually a day for a lot of celebrations today, but I picked this one since my one of my favorite edible pastimes is slurping down a dozen or so of these mollusks every now and then. So there it is, Oysters Rockefeller, and that's all I have to say about that.
Yuck. Yuck. Well, they're cooked with the – aren't the – when it's Rockefeller,
yes.
The oysters are cooked. So
yes,
that's not so bad.
It's raw.
It's the slimy raw ones that I cannot deal with. Yuck. Yuck. Anyway. Anyway, I remember my grandfather used to make oyster stew. And I loved the flavor of the broth from the oysters, but I could never eat the oysters. You know, but at that point in time, they used lots of butter and cream and, you know, all that good stuff. So so I always – and then you always use those oyster crackers to put into the to the broth.
Forget those, those little
can't
crackers.
Forget those. So that's when it was good. And it's just not the same today. I don't think they – the butter's changed. Everything's changed, you know, and taste and so forth. But – one thing that hasn't changed, and that's, well, it did change, the price of gold today. Gold was up in the New York spot price market, up $6 at $1,878. Silver was still down 4 pennies, though, at $23.69. Platinum was up a buck at $1,088. Palladium was down to $1,854. The USDX today was also up 0.07 at 103.27. Crude oil was up 37 cents at $75. The paper markets today, you have the Dow up 186 points, 33,704. And oh, all these investors are just waiting for the inflation report. Ooh, so exciting. The S&P was up 27 at 39.19. NASDAQ was up 106, 10,742. Europe was negative across the board. Asia, the Nikkei was stronger by 0.75%. 10-year yield, that was up 0.094 at 3.611. And let's take a peek at natural gas, 3.60. That was down almost 8%. So, wow. That price is really amazing, but it's a good thing. But it's a good thing because I guess they now want to outlaw or perhaps take away our gas stoves. Yeah, they want to regulate, saying that that gas is – I never liked gas stoves. I have one. I don't like them. I prefer to have electric. But a lot now, you know, it used to be natural gas. Gas was always less expensive than electric. Well, that's not the case anymore. Electric is still cheaper than your natural gas for your stoves and I guess furnaces and everything. So it'll be interesting though to see if they take the stoves away, if they'll also take the furnaces away. So that means people will have to convert from gas to electric. So we'll just have to wait and see how that one comes about. But, so you'll be told one more time just what you have to do. Yes, you will be ordered to do this and you will be ordered to do that. So no choices, but that's where we're heading in our future. Well, now we heard a lot about this. We've talked about this, about the funding that the new House might slash to the IRS. And there was a bill that was passed last night that would take away the funding dollars for the IRS. But the thing of it is, it's not going to pass the Senate. But its president at the top of the House GOP agenda suggests that IRS funding could be reoccurring, sticking point in some future budget clashes. Now, this was the first legislation that was passed by this new Congress. The bill passed 221 to 210 along party lines, and it does target the IRS funding boost and the Democrats' inflation. That's so funny, Reduction Act last year. I guess that's about... You know, that was going to reflect on the 87,000 IRS agents. And so anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
Oh, well, of course, the administration is saying that, that taking away the money is not a good thing or wouldn't be a good thing. A spokesperson there said, called it reckless. So they're certainly defending their plan to invest $80 billion more in primarily additional agents to bring in an estimated $700 billion in new revenue, ostensibly from making wealthier.
Yeah, well,
taxpayers pay their fair share.
Well, that ain't going to happen because the wealthy has the money to fight them and the attorneys and everything else, all the loopholes. So they end up going after the little guy who doesn't have the money and he ends up paying more. That's how that works. Yep. So all their talk about going after the wealthy, that ain't true. The wealthy sit up there on mainstream media and they'll come out and say, well, yeah, go ahead and tax us more. Yeah, I think you should. Well, because they know darn well they have the loopholes, the money. They can move money around faster than you can blink. And, how many times do we have to be told they don't pay anything and they're not going to pay anything? So, you know, so, yeah. The sad thing about this is, I mean, and I agree, they should withhold the funding. I agree they shouldn't hire 87,000 agents to go after, you know, people like us. They're not going to go after the wealthy. You know, and the funny thing about it is the Senate isn't going to approve the defunding of it anyway. You know, they want to bring in, you know, what, $700 billion, almost a trillion more from the tax. How much more can the taxpayers give? So, I don't know, Dave. You know what? It's just a talking point, I think, for elections to come.
A lot of them are.
So when we go into let's see here, the Atlantic Fed president, they're saying that the Fed's going to have to raise rates higher than 5% to tackle the inflation. Rafael Bostic, he's the Atlantic Fed president, and Mary Daly, she's the San Francisco Fed president, both said that it has to be over 5%. There would have to be a stronger case for a smaller 25 basis hike at the next Fed meeting in February if the CPI data due out this Thursday shows a softening in inflation. But when asked by reporters how long he thought rates should remain above 5%, he said it in three tiny words, a long time. So Jerome Powell today emphasized the need for the Fed to free of political influence while it tackles persistently high inflation, which is really kind of funny because I don't care where he raises rates to. You know, you're still going to have inflation. It's still going to go higher. It's going to go up and down. And every time it just goes down doesn't mean that their policies are working. And, you know, you start funneling all of this money into the economy into the people again with all their programs. Inflation is not transitory, as they said it would be. So 5%, yeah, it'll be 5 plus for a very long time, as Mr. Bostic had quoted. But Powell said price stability is the bedrock of a healthy economy and provides the public with immeasurable benefits over time. Well, yeah, they ran out of programs to create a false price stability. But he says when restoring price stability when inflation is high can require measures that are not popular in the short term. Define short term. They couldn't define transitory. So, again, just a bunch of gobbledygook, Dave.
Yeah, well, Powell did not talk about or give any new clues about where policy's headed. Of course, that's for a Fed that's raised interest rates 7 times last year, totaling 4.25 percentage points, with more increases on the way this year as early as next month, February 1st, in fact. But you know what? He didn't have to. He has said plenty already, as have his colleagues on the Fed, voting and non-voting members of the FOMC. So we know, and my article in our newsletter this week, plus last Friday's blog talked about this. In fact, Friday's blog said to take it to the bank. The Fed will raise by 50 basis points. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the third segment today, but it's coming, and yeah, I can't imagine there'll be any additional reports that will be so good from the perspective of the Fed between now and its next meeting, Melody, that a majority of members are suddenly going to say, well, you know what, we may need to get to over 5% eventually. We don't have to do anything this month, or, you know, we only have to do 25 basis points. That's just not in their DNA. So there's going to be another a half a percent coming. So be prepared.
He'll raise the rates accordingly to the stock market, to the Dow, and what they're doing. If they were falling apart, he probably wouldn't be so, if they weren't able to bring him back, he probably wouldn't be so accommodative into raising rates. He'd be pulling back. So as long as they can funnel money in and keep that stock market raising, you know, he'll raise until it has a drastic And if you've got two Fed presidents saying that it needs to be over 5%, well, you know, then it really needs to be over 8% probably. You know, because they're certainly not going to go too high to upset the apple cart. Can you imagine if they had come out and said 8%? Oh, my gosh, that would have gotten some impact. So they're gonna say enough just to so they can set their records straight and be done with it. So they can come out and declare that their prediction was right or whatever. So I think they learned with transitory. So, but yeah, it's got to be higher than 5% if they really wanted to make any impact. But then again, look what it's going to be doing to the economy. They want to slow down the economy. That's not going to have any impact on all of the inflation, maybe some of it, but not all of it. So because it is a monetary problem. So, but they will never, ever admit that. So, and you got more and more, you know, it's like, you know, try to get more taxes out of people. You got more people. We talk about this all the time. Every time we get new reports on this, well, you got more and more Americans paying for just the basic expenses with credit cards. Dave, there's a growing number of Americans that are relying on credit cards to pay just for basic expenses like, you know, just your normal items.
Groceries, rent.
Groceries. There was new data released by the Census Bureau this week found that more than 35% of households used credit cards or loans in December to assist with spending needs. That marks a 10% increase just from 32% in November. And there was a 67% increase over the 21% in April of 2021. So the rise in credit card uses is, you know, it should be concerning. Now that you have the average credit card annual percentage rate at a new record high of 19.14% last week. According to Bankrate.com database, that goes back to 1985. You had 19%.
That's cheap.
You had 19% in July 1991. But you know what, Dave? I mean, most of your credit cards do charge a lot more than that. You know, some of your not so well known and
I just opened up. I believe yesterday it was a packet from one of the too big to fail banks. Their credit card divisions offering, you know, 0% for, I forget if it was on purchases for 18 months. And then it would go up to 29.99%.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I mean, I'm not interested in that stuff anyway, but
29.9. I mean, yeah. That's your real rate.
That's
outrageous. You know, this is just what they should be charging. It's not what they are, but
that's the average. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Average.
And look at our, you know, debt across this nation. I mean, I'll guarantee you 50% of the credit card holders aren't getting the good rates. They're getting the higher rates. And if you owe $5,000 in debt, the current APR, this is the current APR level, means it would take about 191 months and $6,500 in interest to pay off the debt, just making the minimum payments. So you owe $5,000, but you pay $6,500. So, you know, you're paying, you know, $11,000. That's all. It takes 16 years.
Crazy.
It is.
But even you know, compare the 16.3 average at the beginning of the year still means $5,500 in interest and getting out of debt after 185 months. That's still over 15 years. So, you know, don't get the idea that, you know, just because this is going up, you know, from 16 to 19%, well, that's not a whole lot, you might say. It's where you're starting from. So any further increase is a lot can have a tremendous impact. And if you've got other forms of debt, I mean, credit cards certainly one of our most familiar. But you know, if you're younger, you have student loan debt, you have a car loan. Oof. Hang on, ladies and gentlemen.
Was that the break music?
It is.
Where did that time go? We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Working for a living. Working for a living. Working for a living. Living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy me, all things ain't what they used to be. Lost my radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. I got a little distracted there for a minute because I just wanted to bring in yesterday I made the announcement that we're going to start doing some education. It's going to be Gold and Silver 101. And I asked if anybody had questions to go ahead and email them to me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And I did get some, I had a good response on questions that we'll start going over tomorrow. And I'm actually going to see if there isn't any way, maybe not the first one, because we'll have to do a little bit of practice and so forth, but maybe we can capture them and actually put them on the website or attach them to the newsletter as they go out. So I don't know. That would be a good thing to attach them to the newsletter. And have a little bit of education on purchasing gold and silver, why you buy it, how it performs, and you know, how do you use it, and what are you going to do with it, and why do you hold it, and the differences and comparisons and what you hear, and
kind of what I believe is the truth and the misrepresentation. I mean, the whole ball of wax. So we're going to go ahead and start that tomorrow. And so if you have anything you'd like to add, or yeah, you can add something if you'd like, or a question or comments, send them to discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And also, everyone was very good, so thank you very much. Make sure in the subject line that you put questions for show, questions for program, because that way, you know, they don't get overlooked and we see them. So discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. I just want to touch on this before we head on. Home prices could fall by 10% in 2023. Yeah, they could decline by 4 and 10% before hitting bottom. This is from a new note from analysts at the too-big-to-fail bank, Barclays. The likelihood of a sharp house price correction has intensified, emphasizing that the uncertainty in the market right now is around the trajectory of interest rates. We saw home prices shoot up like a rocket at the 2020, and now they're beginning to fall down. And I just before you head on, give us a little something about the how much they have soared since 2020. I just saw a headline come out while we were doing the program. Wells Fargo, once the number one player in mortgages, is stepping back from the housing market. So instead of, yeah, I know, the crooks, the corrupted Wells Fargo. But the point is, they're pulling back. So what do they see? Instead of previous goal of reaching as many Americans possible, they're now going to offer home loans only to the existing bank and wealth management customers. Wells Fargo is also shuttering its correspondent business that sells mortgages through third-party companies and significantly shrinking its mortgage servicing portfolio through asset sales. So that sounds a little bit like derivatives in there, but or subprime. But so this is going to result in a fresh round of layoffs for the bank mortgage operations. The executives acknowledged this, but they declined to quantify exactly how many. So here you're seeing a big leader in the housing market beginning to cut back. And just another sign, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, home prices soared in a pretty amazing 42% between February 2020 and their peak last June. Of course, since then, prices have consistently fallen every month. The Barclay folks mention, with house prices already having turned down this summer, the question is not whether house prices will fall further, but by how much. Now, how future Fed rate hikes will play into that, since generally speaking, we're told that mortgage rates move more with the 10-year yield rather than with Fed funds rates per se. There's still a chance that as rates continue to rise, prices will have to come down in order for people to afford them. National Association of Home Builders and others have been saying that the housing industry has already been in a recession for several months now. Falling prices could, emphasis on could, be a way out of that funk, Melody, but time will tell. Certainly not bad news for prospective buyers.
Well, I just want to add on to this. You know, the World Bank today came out with another warning that, hey, recession this year is going to come perilously close. I'm sorry. It's like, who are these people? Going to be led by weaker growth in the world's top economies, the U.S., Europe, and China. This is in their annual report. The World Bank, you know, it lends money out to poorer countries for development projects, but they're slashing their growth this year by nearly half, to just 1.7%. But what's interesting, predicts the U.S. will eke out a growth of 0.5. So how good of an economy is 0.5%? I can't imagine that's a good sign here in the U.S. And not on top of high prices and, of course, the more expensive borrowing rates. So you're going to see Europe. You know, they've been a major exporter to China. They're going to suffer from their economy. I wonder if Europe exports more to China than we do.
That's a good question.
We just import from China, but I wonder what we export. Agriculture, we probably do. We probably do more for China than UK, but you know, I wonder if there's other areas where... Anyway.
Take a look at that.
Yeah. Good question.
So. Yeah. I mean, this, if true, which I certainly believe in it, the fact that growth projections have been overestimated. Now, a couple of thoughts. One, at 0.5% growth, it's not going to take much at all for the U.S., for example, to fall into the classical definition of recession, that is negative growth for a minimum of 2 months. And that's certainly important. But, you know, whether it's 0.5%, 1%, minus 1%, you know, as you said, Melody, there's not... I mean, the difference is almost negligible in terms of their effects. With that kind of downturn, there are going to be layoffs, unemployment, jobless claims going to be up. Again, certainly we hope not to the extent of the early pandemic period. But that that time, I mean, I see clouds darkening. Rather than, you know, blue skies on the horizon. And that's talking about the richest country in the world. I mean, think about some of the countries in other parts of the world. I mean, whether it's Africa, where they, you know, Saharan Africa anyway, was home to 60% of the world's impoverished. So that's going to have a real big effect. And I suspect with Chinese growth predicted to be one half of what it had been pre-pandemic, coming out of the zero COVID fiasco, which I think is a long way from over, I think is going to have Xi Jinping and the Communist Party looking over their shoulders by... if not the end of this year, then certainly early next year.
Well, you know how to get me fired up.
So What did I say?
Well, no, it's going into this. You have down here to talk about the this Biden and Trudeau meet in Mexico summit with Obrador. That will get my flares going.
Yes.
And I am just so, I'm not going to do too much on that. I just want to, you know, who are these people to say that it is our job to improve life across their region, telling Biden that he holds the key in his hand? I mean, are you kidding me? This is the moment for us to determine to do away with this abandonment, this disdain, and this forgetfulness for Latin America and the Caribbean. This is what Lopez Obrador said. How dare he? We have just taken in millions of illegal immigrants off their hands. I mean, it's like, are you kidding me?
Spoken as a true victim. Disappointingly, I might add. Now, we don't know how much, you know, if these quotes are, you know, sort of embody Obrador's mentality and way of thinking, but boy, certainly an inferiority complex.
Come on. They're concerned about supposedly that the U.S. is focusing on domestic manufacturing and they're afraid that they're going to be left behind. Well, how about bringing back all of our factories that are landed in Mexico and then see how you like it? You know, it's just like, why don't they do something for their own? Why don't they put the drug cartel in jail, fight them militarily, and maybe create their own economy and help their own people create their own jobs in their country? They're so corrupt everywhere down there, but it's just feeding over to the United States that the corruptness. I mean, it's just like, geez, Luigi. How much more money do they want for us? What else do they want us to do for them? Well, we are doing them. We're taking a lot of their population off their hands. They're all socialist nations, to some, you know. So yeah, now we get to do it for them. They ain't paying us. Maybe we should bill Mexico and all those other countries that they're coming from. Maybe we should send them a bill for all the things that we give them when they land here. Their phones, their money, their food, the food, and this and that. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's bill those countries. See if we get any money back. Anyway, see, you got me fired up, Dave.
When will I learn?
Yes, I know you won't. Well, this is interesting because, you know, it's just another area that we don't talk about is the insurance companies and, you know, how solid are they, you know, financially? I mean, if you look at traffic crashes in the U.S., it costs $340 billion per year or just over $1,000 for each of the country's 328 million people. Now, this is a new survey or study by the federal safety regulators. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said that it studied crashes in calendar year 2019 that killed 36,000 people, injured 4.5 million, and damaged 23 million vehicles. Now, this report drives home just how devastating traffic crashes are for families and some of the burden that they place. Well, that's why we do carry insurance. That's what insurance companies are supposed to pay. But it certainly does devastate a family. But fatal crashes rose dramatically in 2021. I wonder why, Dave. Why they would suddenly rise? Was it because we spent 2020 at home? Didn't go anywhere. We forgot how to drive coming out in 2021.
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility. There could be a more, a more logical reason that we're not thinking of at the moment. Certainly. I mean, who knows? But it's certainly alarming that people. What?
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, I mean, if you're one of the majority of people who are not involved directly anyway in crashes, we pay for roughly 75% of all crash costs through increased insurance premiums, something that Melody was just alluding to, but also from taxes, response time from police officers, EMTs, and what have you. Got lost time from road congestion, fuel consumption, blah, blah, blah. I'm not quite sure. I'd like to see the model that calculated this. The study also showed from 1975 to 2019, seatbelt use saved 404,000 lives and also prevented, we'll say, $18 trillion in societal harm. 43,000 people killed in U.S. roads in 2021, highest number in 16 years. So the way it's written, it does suggest that, the pandemic, the shutdowns in particular, had a lot to do with this.
Well, it'd be interesting.
People working from home and what have you.
It'd be interesting to see an age group.
Oh, well, that would be. I'm sure there. I shouldn't say I'm sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. I'll look for that study. The government loves all these categories, so I'd be really surprised if we didn't see age groups broken out.
Yeah, so, yeah, and particularly the youth that were home for a year, I would sure they would probably have, you know, a bigger impact, I would think. But anyway, plus we have baby boomers that are getting older too, you know, so it would have been interesting to see those numbers in their study if they would provide those. But anyway, we're heading into the second break of the program today, so please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business this final segment. She's at 1-800-375-4188. And I will try not to bring you down this final segment, although sometimes the news just has its way with us. That's the nature of the beast, I'm afraid. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets again. It features Doug Nolan's excellent blog on the major financial and geopolitical issues he expects this year. Apothecary Herbs' Wendy Wilson, who will be here tomorrow, her Food for Thought column discusses cancer cures already out there. And I have an article on consumer inflation expectations. It says, in a nutshell, Americans are becoming more and more confident that inflation will ease in the coming year, albeit not necessarily as calm as an ebbing low tide. And although households are planning to be more circumspect when it comes to their own spending, they remain hawkish about their own jobs and jobs in general. That's the somewhat Pollyannish picture being painted by the New York Fed's latest survey of consumer economic expectations. Courtney Brown and Neil Irwin write that we're tweaking our outlooks like the economy will unfold in a positive way this year. That day I could end up being self-fulfilling, particularly if slower spending and reduction in inflation expectations actually reduce price pressures, even in the absence of significant labor market disruption that the Fed's looking for. At the same time, Treasury yield sank on Friday as reports suggested that the highly desired soft landing for the economy may actually be possible. Don't see how, but I guess a lot of others do. A soft landing where inflation eases without the economy falling into recession would give the Fed a good reason to ease up in the interest rates, the hikes that have hammered the stock and bond markets to a lesser extent, precious metals last year. Yields on the 10-year Treasury note plummeted after what some called a near-perfect December jobs report was followed by the latest ISM survey on the services sector showing a surprise slowdown. Until recently, continuing strength in the service sector was seen by analysts as a big reason that the Fed might keep hiking rates sharply throughout 2023. Falling yields, in turn, perked up the stock and precious metal markets, both of which notched their best day of this year so far. The S&P 500 rose 2.3%, in fact. The median Fed survey respondent now expects inflation in the coming 1 year to be 5%. That's the lowest since June 2021. As recently as June last year, that number was 6.8. That's not actual, that's expectations. A consumer spending slowdown may also be coming. The median household survey expects their outlays to rise by 5.9% over the next year. That's a full percentage point lower than in November and way down from the 9% expected in May. At the same time, those falling spending expectations came alongside an improving view of the outlook for household incomes. Median household expect their income to rise 4.6% in the next year. That's up a tad from November. Now, Matt Phillips believes the results together point to an inflationary psychology that's retreating, even as Americans are relatively confident about their own jobs and incomes. The median household put almost 13% odds on losing their job in the next year. That's up slightly from November, but below levels that prevailed before the pandemic. For example, an average of over 14% in 2019. Softer demand for goods and services, together with falling inflation expectations, is exactly what the economy needs if prices are going to fall without bringing major damage to the labor market. But even if consumers' inflationary expectations may be heading in the right direction, it's still a lot higher than before the pandemic started. For example, 5% inflation expectation over the next year is almost double the 2.6% year-ahead reading over all of 2019. Plus, while inflation expectations for the next year fell in December, the median rate over the next 3 years was still unchanged at 3%, and the five-year number actually ticked up a tad. So it's clear that the economy is far from out of the woods, but for the time being, consumers seem to be anticipating more modest inflation while their jobs and earnings potential seem to remain intact. Even though the Fed's preferred inflation measures, the core PCE index, you can be sure that Wall Street's eyes are on the next CPI update out Thursday morning. That report shows a third straight monthly retreat. All sorts of investors on Wall Street and on Main Street will be smiling for the time being, that is. Now, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal says this was supposed to be a horrible winter for Europe. Freezing cold temperatures, natural gas shortages, oil shortages, recession, and industrial companies picking up their stakes and moving to more fertile ground. Instead, today, it's a bevy of euro bullishness out there, to use his words. To start, the euro's at its highest level against the dollar since last June. Standard Chartered's head of global G10 foreign exchange research, Steve Englander, expresses more bullishness on the euro thanks to the expected rate hikes by the European Central Bank, as well as firmer than expected economic data in the region. Indeed, too big to fail Citibank's Eurozone Economic Surprise Index. That's a measure of how data are coming in relative to expectations, is at its highest level in over a year. Deutsche Bank is also out with a bullish call on the euro today. Meanwhile, the big energy crunch story for now, well, looks to be fizzling out some. Thanks to mild weather, gas storage in Europe is so high that things are already looking better for Europe in 2024, not to mention 2023. Another element that's surely lifting European sentiment is that since China is such a huge trading partner with Europe, the reopening and end of COVID zero in China should help really prop up demand for European goods in the world's second largest economy. Wiesenthal concludes that thanks to a warmer than expected temperatures, better than expected economic activity, Chinese reopening, and falling prices, everyone's waking up to the fact that a lot of those winter doom scenarios just might not materialize after all. But we shall see. Now, here's an interesting one. Several economists and analysts say that the U.S. needs more people. People, Americans have to start having more babies. They say that failure to increase the U.S. population is among the biggest economic risks for the years and decades ahead. That's one takeaway from a group led by some top former American officials. Sheds light on how some thinkers see the high-level economic challenges of this decade and beyond. Now, for much of this century, lack of adequate demand has been a major challenge, with policymakers turning the knobs of fiscal and monetary policy to deal with it. Now the key challenge is supply. That is improving the ability of the economy to make things and have them available for purchase. But worsening demographic trends like population imply persistent labor shortages, not to mention slumping economic growth and struggles to fund Social Security and other retirement programs long term. Well, the elite Aspen Economic Strategy Group, it's an arm of the Aspen Institute led by former U.S. Treasury Secretaries Hank Paulson and Timothy Geithner, published some new research this week called Economic Policy in a More Uncertain World. Now, Melissa Kearney and Philip Levine of Aspen write that Aspen Institute, the U.S. fertility rate has fallen sharply since 2007. Now it's well below the replacement rate that implies a steady population. Now that's in the absence of immigration. The, quote, total fertility rate, defined as the average number of children born to a woman over her lifetime, was 2.12 in 2007. It's now down to 1.65 as of the end of last year. It's the lowest ever recording in the U.S., and a key reason is shifting priorities among young adults. Kearney and Levine say low or falling fertility will eventually reduce the size of the U.S. workforce and its overall population, thus reducing innovation, productivity, and overall economic growth. They warn that projections of the long-term finances of Social Security, Medicare haven't adequately factored in the likelihood of continued low fertility. And that's bad news. Paulson himself says U.S. economy is confronting a wholly different set of economic headwinds these days, including demographics, debt, and decoupling with China threatening future standards of living. He says we should play to our strength by welcoming the world's talent, unleashing innovation, and providing a stable, open, competitive business environment. Well, they're also going to have to talk some younger people in particular into having more babies. Now, last today, and I'm saying you can take this to the bank. Digital media headlines on February 1st this year, 2 p.m. Eastern, will say, quote, Federal Reserve keeps inflation promise, raises benchmark rate by 50 basis points. Forget that interest rate traders currently see a 76% likelihood of a 25 basis point increase. I mean, the other 24 does see that 50 basis point rise, although I believe this group will get much closer to or even overtake the 25 BPers before the Fed next concludes meeting on the 1st. Forget that none, zero, nada, see a pause in the Fed's rate hiking until its July meeting, and then it's only a slight hint of holding rates steady. Just 1.5 see that likelihood, however. In fact, less than half of traders, 43%, see the Fed either pausing, 28%, or easing, 15%, by the Fed's last policy meeting in December. So let's assume this hiking scenario comes to fruition in 2023. It increases of 50 basis points in February, followed by 25 in March, May, and June. And then the Fed pauses for the rest of the year. I mean, who actually knows what will happen? Based on what we're hearing, I don't think a pause even by June will be possible, but let's just assume that for now. Means the Fed funds rate, that now in a range of 4.25% to 4.5%, will rise another 1.25 percentage points by then to a new range of 5.5 to 5.75. Certainly within the realm talked about by Bostic and Daly, as Melody mentioned at the top of the program today. And that's from a range of 0 to 0.25 early last year before the Fed's tightening campaign began, or is it obsession? The federal funds rate, which is the rate at which banks lend money to each other, usually on an overnight basis, hasn't been as high as 5.75% in 22 years, since December 2000. Crazy. But I digress. The primary reason I see this picture taking hold, particularly a 50 basis point hike in February, is last Friday's jobs report. Labor Department reported that non-farm payrolls increased by 223,000 for the month, well above economist consensus estimate of 200,000. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday, which will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.